Hi, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 685. This is part two of the speech. I've been working on a speech. I keep trying to come up with different ways of approaching the subjects that I talk about. I think it comes from a frustration with my fiction writing, maybe. And the fact that when it does make any progress, it does it slowly, and I find myself totally dissatisfied with what I've got. And makes me nuts. So I there we go. Oh, I lost signal. This isn't a good area. Anyway. I'm taking in the message because I'm having, it's my normal gap. Well, these things are, you know, the pills I take, the endomethacin, I call them my loopy pills. It makes it so that I can live with the pain in my knee until it works itself out. But it makes me kind of crazy. It makes me a little scatterbrained. I really apologize that that's kind of the way it ends up being, and I'm sorry. I think I was trying to make a point there, and I think I lost it completely. Let's go ahead and get back to what the speech was talking about. In the thing before, we talked about some of the concepts. I'm not going to do a recap of what was done before. I'm just going to bring up a couple of things that are very germane to this part. We talked about the fact that although there is much divisiveness around the concepts of being autistic or having Asperger's syndrome, however one wants to look at it, there are some things we can really agree on. The one big thing we can agree on is that people who have autism, one of their traits that is probably the most noticeable when you talk to somebody, when you get to know them even just a little bit, is that they're weird, they're strange, and when people try to just get down to a basic word that everybody can feel real comfy about, is the word alien. You know, I always talked about feeling like a stranger in my own hometown. Jews have the whole concept. Stephen talked about in the Bible. Jews had the whole thing about feeling like they were a stranger in a strange land. And but to an autistic person or an Asperger's person, this whole world is a strange land. Or at least I haven't found it yet. There is no place where autism people feel like they're okay. They're accepted. Even among very, very, you know, people who say, oh, we respect all nations and cultures. We respect everything. And you go, you know what? I'm going to seriously challenge that. And I can bet you $20 that when I'm done, you know, when you spent some time with me, you are going to ultimately reject me, and you will be trying to force me to behave a way that works better for you, not for me. But that was kind of what the first thing was about. I don't want to get weird about that. So the flip side of being this alien, this stranger, this foreigner, and we just try to get down to just calling it being an alien. The whole concept comes from being from another planet. The whole point of not being an alien, I put a term to it, and it encompasses people who, and I want to be really careful about this because it's very important to make distinctions here. Let me go ahead and talk about locals. Locals are just basically the opposite of aliens. People that are from this planet. People that don't feel like they're from someplace else, and they just kind of, you know, they were born wrong or something, you know. So we've got these two groups. Now, one's a whole lot smaller than, and you need to bring up the whole concept, and the speech does, brings up the whole concept of the fact that the actual title of the speech is, "This is not my world." And the whole idea is that for locals, this world predominantly, I mean, it doesn't completely for everybody, but by and large, this is a world that works for them. You know, social structures are in place that fill their needs, you know. That's why it can be a very easy thing to say, like about schools, for instance, that, you know, one of the important things about schools are it provides a social environment that kids so desperately need. And I'm an alien because I don't really seem to need that. Now, I don't know if that's inborn or if I've just learned to be kind of non-asocial over the years, just because every social thing I've tried to do has fallen on its face and usually just is embarrassing to everybody around me, and therefore I've been embarrassed too, or I've, you know, whatever I feel in those circumstances that I want to avoid is part of why I'm, it may be part of why I'm asocial. It may be built in though, I don't know. I don't seem to have those needs. I think my daughter, Brenna, my third child, is a perfect example of that. She doesn't need this stuff. But it was funny, when we took her to get diagnosed to see if she was, you know, autism, Asperger's, something like that, they said, "Oh no, she's fine." And the first thing I've learned is that when you go to a diagnostic sort of thing, that's their fallback. They're pretty much always going to say that, given that. And what they said was, "She just needs more social interaction. She's just really too closed off from the world." You know, it really wasn't a question of what does Brenna really want. It was a question of what society wants to see from her. You know, and society, of course, thinks that it's always right. You know, whatever the prevalent society is, that's the best way to be. If you're not like that, the problem isn't with society, the problem is with you. And that's the essence of this second part, is that is what society asks of you, what society demands of you, and how you react to it. I struggled a lot with the second part of the speech. It's actually changed quite a bit. There was a whole other part, and I felt like it really didn't come to a conclusion. What ultimately happened was I was just blathering on and on and on about differences. and never really got down to having anything really to say. Wasn't really making a point. What somebody needed to do. And so, while I was pondering that and saying, well, what on earth am I going after? I don't think I really came to a resolution. A analogy came to mind, and I decided to go ahead and just write out the analogy. I'm not saying that the speech is done, even at this point. I kind of put it aside, and I've been working on other projects that are more interesting to me at the moment. But that speech is still there, you know, waiting to be looked at, reworked. When I feel like I've come to some kind of a point, and I'm not saying it's finished, but I've put into it what I have at the moment. Hopefully I'll be able to come back to it and say, oh, here, this is what was missing. And then I'll finish it, hopefully. It's always difficult to say what constitutes that, you know. When will Jay ever really be finished with anything he does? But here's the analogy, and here's where I come from to say that you can take some advice from an alien. And here it is. Now, you guys know if you've listened to my podcast at all for any length of time, I do trip over into what would be considered the religious. And this part will also drop down into what I would consider to be the religious. Even though I tend to be very non-dogmatic, I tend to say what I think is right, not what I've been taught to say. Which also means that when I come to a decision about something, even though it may be, and it often is, the same decision that my religion says, I tend to approach it differently, and I have different ways of looking at it. You know, I think, and I hope I'm substantiated in thinking this way, I'm thinking that truth is truth, and you'll find that many different, that you can find many different paths toward a certain truth. You know, you can come at it from many different aspects. And you'll recognize truths when you find that from many angles, it remains true. And so, that, I guess, I don't think I was trying to, no, I'm always trying to find truth. Come on, it's one of my obsessions. Okay, so my analogy starts out. Think of a vacant building. I think about in a big city, I guess, although I haven't lived in a big city for a very long time. Of course, lots of places have vacant buildings. You know, run down, fly apart of town. What tends to happen to vacant buildings? Well, you know, squatters tend to find them. Squatters tend to go into them. You know, a squatter is somebody who's living on a piece of land without the permission of the owner. And it's really interesting how some cities are giving property rights to squatters that stay in a place for a certain amount of time. If you squat someplace for, say, 5 years, and the owner hasn't chosen to evict you, hasn't chosen to throw you out, you know, sent the police to come get you, that all of a sudden there are some rules in some places that allow that squatter rights on that property, even bordering on ownership, you know, simply because the real owner didn't assert what would be considered ownership rights over it, you know, didn't take it, didn't go for it. Anyway. This vacant building that we have gets some squatters, but it ends up being children. They kind of turn into their own little private, you know, mosh pit clubhouse sort of thing. This is what children tend to do when they have a lot of extra time to themselves, or when their parents abandon them, or something along those lines. I'm not going to speak to its validity. I'm not going to speak to its to whether it's a good thing or not. That's not really important how the squatters got there. What's important is what the squatters start doing once they're there. Vacant building, squatters. What they start doing, you know, they do what kids do. They start filling it up full of things that they like, mostly forbidden things, you know. All their drinks are soda or beer or things that you're not supposed to have. All the food is food that you're not supposed to consume very much of. Twinkies, candy, and really decadent stuff that you're not supposed to have. Maybe the kids even stole them. Another thing to kind of thumb their nose at the larger reality. And I want you to keep I want you to keep open to that larger society, because you might be thinking that in and amongst when I talk about the larger society in this analogy, that it mirrors, it parallels the predominant society in, like, say, the United States, for instance. And it does. It does. And I'll try to make that clear later. Okay, so excuse me. So you have all these kids, you know, they've got all the goodies, they got all the treats, you know. They bring in their boom boxes and they have their music as counterculture, loud, as obnoxious as music can be. You've all heard it, you know. Well, I don't know if you guys have. In my part of the country, you know, there's cars where I think they actually space the speakers out from the car itself. They're actually trying to broadcast, and it's just, it shakes houses. I remember the first house we ever had. We had somebody that loved doing that. They loved going up and down our street. And it did. I mean, our glass and our windows would actually rattle. You know, because it was just so loud. And, you know, and you would say the person inside there must be deaf, or they must be wearing earplugs or something. But I found out from people who do this kind of work that they kind of face their speakers out. They don't point the speakers in to the car like you would in a normal circumstance when you want the kind of a high fidelity experience in your car. They don't do that. They're not after high fidelity. What they're after is big, huge woofers, and they usually put them outside of the interior of the car. You know, it actually gets put in other places. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've been told by installers. Anyway, so you can already kind of set the whole scene. Whole bunch of kids like that get together. You can picture gang. You can call it whatever you want to. Gang, club, in crowd, whatever. Okay? Anyway, they've got their private space. They've got their all the stuff that they need to carry out what they would really like to be doing, especially when they're away from adults. Well, when you get into those kinds of circumstances, the first thing that always happens is that the pecking order will be established. There will be some alpha child. Typically a guy. You know, I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. I don't want the women's livers to just get really angry at me because a girl doesn't get to be the big leader of this group. And you go, I'm sorry. I said, if it's kind of a multi-sex circumstance, some alpha guy will be the leader. Sorry. Anyway, so you kind of start setting up the pecking order. You know, it gets very much in a pyramid. You know, you have the strongest, most coolest, the most capable, or just the most belligerent person. People. It's usually a group. They all break up. You know, no one person has all the attributes that can cow everybody. It ends up being a small, tight-knit type group of people up there at the very top. And they handle just different aspects of what needs to happen. Some people need somebody that's a little nurturing. And so you have to have your nurturer. You have to have your really strong person that does things. You know, they're kind of your enforcer types. You know, you really have to have your smart I don't know if you really have to have a smart person. Smart people tend to stay away from these circumstances unless they're powerful too, which doesn't typically happen. It just often doesn't work that way. I don't know why, it just doesn't. I'm sure if I sat here and pondered it for a while, I could come up with a couple of interesting ideas. And then I'd have to figure out if they were actually even close to right. Hard to say. Don't know. Can't say. Anyway. Okay. I'm in a town now, so I've got to be kind of careful. Ron Paul for president! Oh, what fantastic people! I like these guys. Man. Maybe I should live in Carrizozo. These are people who at least have my same interests at heart, maybe. Or at least somebody who's in that building does. Anyway, so So you're in that building, you've got your pecking order set up. You guys know how it goes, you've seen it go, every single school runs this way too. Teachers find themselves in the pecking order, and, it works that way. Most of our society works that way. You wonder why a certain kind of person always becomes the leader of a country, for instance, or always tends to get themselves made one of the leaders of a country. Certain sorts of people get that kind of thing. And you guys know how it works. Whether it's you or whether it's not you, you know how these things manage themselves. Anyway, so sorry, I'm still being distracted. I'm almost out of town, and this will go much better. Okay, we're getting closer. Under construction, very steep grade. Uh-oh. Okay, well this might get interesting. We'll find out. Anyway, all right. I think we've pretty much set that scene. I think we're okay. You know, and left to themselves, which is the way things go, this is why squatters are called squatters, it isn't just because they set up there for a few days and then they wander off. They feel a sense of ownership over this building. This is their building now. You know, the owner has not come. They've been there for a while. They're feeling very comfortable. You know, this is their place. Everything's great. And one of the fun things that happens And it really ends up being the most fun thing. Eating all the kinds of foods you want, drinking the kind of drinks you want to drink, listening to the kind of music that you want to listen to, is okay for a little while, but honestly, the thing that keeps these things going the longest and the best and makes everybody kind of go, this is so cool, is the fact that you get to determine who's in and who's out. You know, the whole point of doing it in a building instead of in like a field, for instance, is that you can really monitor access to things, you know. It isn't just to hide from something. Oftentimes it's not to hide from something or to hide your activities. I don't think it really has to do with that. It has the most to do with you want to control access. You know, there's certain people you want in and certain people you want out. That's where all the fun is. And you know who's in. The cool people are in. The people who appease the powers that be very well. I used a word during the talk called, the speech, called stooges. Because that's what those people are. Those are people who are kind of I'm using a whole other term that might need another definition. They're kind of low level, pawny type people who do the will of their betters, you know, the bigger people, and they, you know, and they're kind of their low-level enforcers. Sometimes the biggest people on top, they don't have to do a thing. You know, they give privilege and position to underlings, and they let the underlings do all the work. You know, fighting amongst each other, looking for favor, right? Hey, if you'll go out there and you go beat up that kid, if you bring back one of their teeth that you've knocked out of their head, you know, I'll give you this special privilege. You can be my lieutenant. You can, you know, you can have access to my special horde or something like that. You know, people, when you look at it from the outside, it seems silly. Oh, people would never do that. But you know what? They do it every day. Our society thrives on that kind of behavior. You know, the whole concept of what party do you belong to, for instance, in politics, in the United States, you know, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Those two, the whole facets of those have to do with what kind of perks do you feel like you would get if you identified with a party. And, you know, and it doesn't have to do anything with actually gaining any power in it. You know, some people say, oh, I'm a Democrat because, you know, you're hoping that when you say that, when you support Democratic candidates, let's say you're a really poor person, that you'll get more free stuff, that they will tax rich people, which you think is a very justified, fair thing to do. And that you'll get some of that stuff basically for nothing more than saying, hey, I want those guys in power. The kind of guys I think might do that. You know, and whether they get around doing it or not doesn't really matter. I don't think, you know, it used to be that, or at least the perception was, that Democrats were the type of people that would give you, you know, that would steal from the rich and give to the poor. And I don't know if they've really ever done that lately. It's kind of fallen out of vogue, even for them, to do that. it doesn't seem to have won them what they hoped it would. Even though sometimes they'll still give lip service to it. That's all you need to do is just give lip service to it. People will go ahead and vote. People who were going to vote on that basis will go ahead and vote on that basis. Just on the off chance you might do something along those lines. Oh, much more likely the Democrats will do it than the Republicans. Now, they never address the likelihood of it happening, period, which is pretty low these days. You know, the whole point is, well, they're likely to do that. Those are kind of what are called the core. They'll always be there. They'll always do what you want. And in this vacant building with all these kids, it's that same core, you know. They will always be a part of this thing. Even if they don't get what they want. Even if they have to endure quite a bit of abuse. Because that's part of the fun too, right? This club isn't fun if it's just, you know, booze and broads and you know, and banging music, you know. That's just kind of a sauce in which you cook the real thing, which is, you know, breaking down into classes and who's in and who's out. And you'll have that whole group. That's who I refer to when I say stooges. These are people that will do whatever you want them to do just for the chance of staying in the building. Even if they get treated like garbage and have to cower in a corner of the building, the most important thing is they're in the building. You know, these are people who want to feel like they fit in. Feel like that they're okay. Some leader tells them that they're okay because they're in the building, but still treats them pretty much like garbage. But they're going to stick with it because that's the most important thing. You know, nothing else matters. Okay, so you got that picture. Now, you can spend some time talking about the people on the outside, but it's really not terribly interesting. Everybody else is outside. You know, this group in the building, and this is true for all groups, this is true for countries too. Any group at all, they are not inclusive. They may talk about being inclusive. They may say, oh, we want all sorts of people in our little club. Come, come. You'll love it at all. It'll be wonderful. But when it gets down to it, no, they're not. They're not inclusive at all. You know, they may even put laws into place, but they'll find ways of getting around those laws. If you really don't want somebody around, you'll find a way to make sure that they really can't get in. Or that they feel so unwelcome, they will escort themselves out if they ever get close. Or they'll never want to be in the first place. I think maybe that was one of the people like me. I just saw it and went, I'm not interested in being in there, which makes them perfectly happy. You know, because one of the fun things about being inside is you get to mock people that are outside. You get to laugh at them. You get to point your finger at them and tell them how much of a dweeb they are, or a nerd, or a goth, or, you know, the 500 other terms for each individual little group of people who are on this laundry list of people that can't come in, you know. If there was some kind of sign up there, if they really cared to put up a sign, besides private club staff, you know, and they actually were to sit there and enumerate who couldn't come in, you know. No Jews, no Spics, no nerds, no geeks, no, you know, you can just picture the length of that sign for all the no this sort of person, and no that sort of person type of thing. That's what makes it fun. All right. Now you can just imagine who kind of ends up in the building. A lot of people ultimately end up in the building. You know, I'm not going to say it's half. I think that's a little gutsy. I think a majority of people hang around the outskirts of this building. Let's, you know, you can call it a school, you can call it a country, whatever. You know, and then you can give it some kind of a physicality. And you can say, okay, who's this, you know. There's people that don't like what's going on in America, but are they going to leave? Oh, gosh, no. Why? Well, because it's the greatest nation on God's green earth. Sorry, Michael Medved. I don't mean to steal your wonderful little tagline. But, you know, that's part of what keeps a lot of people, you know, on the outskirts of the building. And basically kind of with some kind of hopeful little puppy dog look saying, someday I'll be in. You know, whether they do it by trying to change the rules for entrance or if it's, you know, or if it's whatever. And there's all kinds of ways, I suppose, you can do that. But, I'm an outsider, and I don't know if at any time, maybe I did, but no, I don't think so. I don't think I was ever really wanting much approval, and I can only say that because I take into account the whole concept of being, of school. I think school is one of the most excellent indications of how our society is geared and how it really works, is how school really works. Now, you can look at its face and say, oh, it's an educational institution. We go there, we learn things, and you come out with a diploma, and you go, you know, that's not what school is about at all. It has nothing to do with that stuff. That stuff is so peripheral to the whole thing. It's almost laughable. Trust me. Powerful people who are very successful in school, don't spend any time on those things that you're talking about. They don't put any effort toward that stuff at all. You know, your head cheerleader and the captain of the football team do not go to any kind of effort to get the grades that they get. The grades that they get, they just simply get. You know, you can say it's handed to them. You can say that other people actually do the work for them to make it work. I don't want to tell you. No, I think I will. I think I will. And I don't know if I've talked about it in this context before, but I will. I was a senior in high school. I moved from Lubbock, Texas to Clovis, New Mexico. And I had most of my high school credits done. This was a time when there were actually credits there, and they had decided that if you had enough credits, you didn't have to show up at classes, you know. You didn't have to take extra classes just to fill out your school day. You didn't have to do that. I ended up my senior year having an extra long lunch because I didn't have a class right after lunch, so I could just go lunch. I was a runner. I ran cross country in high school up to my junior year. My senior year, I did not run cross country. I was being, rebellious? No. I was finding that I enjoyed my own company better than other things. Anyway. I had to take a couple of elective classes just to get up to the number I needed. in the mornings. I seem to recall in the afternoon I only had a PE class to take. And I made a deal with the PE teacher that I would go and run, and I would just report and tell her what I did, and she was just flummoxed by what I would do. Because, you know, I was a cross-country runner. I would typically, on a typical afternoon, I would run 7-8 miles. And that was it, you know. That was what I did in my afternoon, mostly running. And I did it for credit. You know, I did it for school. I thought I'd talk the PE teacher into it, I think, just because I said, I don't want to do this crap anymore. Or at least that's the way I remember it. It may have been different. Hard to say. The first part of my class, I had to take a math. You know, so I was taking, I think I was taking trig. And I think I had to take English, because you have to take 4 years of English. So I was taking my English class and my trig class. I took microbiology. But I also had, I think my first class today was, these were small classes. I think there were like 8 periods. And I only filled maybe 5 of them. But I had, a drafting class. And I ended up just kind of being the student assistant in the drafting class, because I didn't really care. You know, everybody else in the drafting class, I think were freshmen and sophomores, so I ended up being kind of a student aide. The drafting class. I don't think I took it as a class. I think I took it as an aid. And I got to do all kinds of neat stuff. I got to play with computers, which was fun. The only time in high school I think I really ever played with computers particularly. Formally. I didn't take a class in it. I've never taken a class in computers ever. And I don't think I ever will. I may. I don't know. I don't think I do, because I just don't learn. I don't learn in a classroom environment. I find it boring. I zoom way ahead of everybody else, and I'm just kind of picking my teeth, waiting for everybody else to show up. You know, so I've never found school to be very useful for me. Anyway, I did these assistant. Student aide duties for this guy, and I kind of got sucked into doing a little bit of help with the SAD program, Students Against Drug Driving. And I had learned over the years, you know, because, you know, you hear about them in school, they're trumpeted, you know. The captain of your football team, if he isn't destined to be, you know, to go and do college football, for instance, or something like that, you know, you have certain people. You have a college football person, the person that's going to go to college and play football for them. You've got your head cheerleader, which is your girl. You know, you have your National Honor Society people, kind of your lead. I don't know if they're really nerds. Off of the National Honor Society person was really not much of a nerd at all. You know, it was more of a political post when it got down to it. I think I was in National Honor Society once in middle school, and then I saw that it was really nothing. You know, it was all about, you know, politics and stuff like that. And I just, it was worthless to me. I didn't feel like, you know, I didn't feel like it had any, it really wasn't worth anything to me. Anyway, so, I got kind of sucked into sad. I don't really remember if I was ever really a member of it. You know, I didn't really care. I was somewhat indifferent. Of course, that kind of comes from the whole Zenith thing. Zenith people really fall into... we are a good resource. I found I've always been a good resource person, but I should never be in charge. Because when it gets down to requiring enough passion to go out and advocate for something, to pound the pavement, to be a real advocate for something, I'm not your man. I'm not your man. I don't care about that much. The things I care about are totally different. And people will say, you don't care about that? And you go, not really. People are often said that these kind of people, Asperger's, autistic type people, and it's really hard to say that because the whole misnomer of being really high functioning. I want to be careful with that. But just to say that people who are really lightly autistic, like me, for instance, you know, I get every impression of being a very capable, non-disabled person, but I'm a real wacko. We get accused of being really cold and callous, and it just comes from being dispassionate. You know, whatever comes, whatever happens. And I think that comes from our alien nature too. We're really quite different. You know. Anyway, so I'm sorry. I keep making these little tangents. I'll try to do better. But stay on course on the whole thing about the sad story leading up to, I'm trying to hope what I led up to. Oh, about status and how society works and how school kind of figures in as being the great incubator of mostly society. If you learn anything, if you actually get good grades, heck, they'll give you grades on a platter. You don't have to actually do anything. It's all about the social thing. If you behave the way they want you to behave, decent grades will come. And you don't have to worry about it. You know. Okay, I'm sorry. I was working for SAD. The president of SAD was she wasn't a cheerleader. In my high school, being a cheerleader was kind of second rate. There was a dance team. That was the big thing, you know. Being a cheerleader was what dance team rejects had to do. The dance team was all about you wiggling yourself in a much more artistic way than rah, rah, ree, you know. Dance team was all about just being sleazy, sexy, gorgeous. You know. It wasn't about spirit at all. It was about lust. Okay? And I'm sorry, I did. I was definitely lusting after several people. I think I ultimately tried to take a girl to the prom who I really liked. And I think she might have been a cheerleader. Maybe not. I was obsessed with her, you know. What these guys... Anyway, it didn't work out. It was definitely one of those things where she ended up being an insider and I was an outsider. And boy, let me tell you, I was violently... I didn't get hit because I don't put myself in circumstances where I'm going to get hit. It's just not that important to me. But somebody came to my house and threatened me that I needed to stay away from these people, that this was really cute. And yes, I did the best I could with what few pathetic skills I had. Anyway, in this class that I took, in this drafting class, where I was a student assistant, and where they kind of got me kind of working on SAD stuff, the leader of the dance team the captain, I guess, was what she was. I won't tell you her name because I don't think she's really, I don't think she's really anything now. Saw her a couple of times after that, but I think she was, she couldn't run with the dog she was hoping to run with. I hope she went out and had a nice life anyway. I hope she didn't become suicidal and decide to commit suicide, because what she'd always hoped for herself didn't come to pass. Maybe it did, I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. I did stuff for Stan. I would write documents. I was good at writing. Always have been good at writing. And I was amazed when, after I was done with all this writing, the advisor, the actual teacher, he ended up being the superintendent in about 10 years after that. And we were, I considered him something of a friend. I think he considered me something of a tool. And I'll tell you why. I would write up all this stuff. I would write these wonderful documents. He said, I kind of want to do this, and I wanted to have this kind of stuff. And he was really happy with the work I did. And then he'd say, let's put down at the bottom the person who had written this, the girl's name. He, the teacher, the drafting teacher, who would soon be a superintendent of schools, he enlisted me in a kind of underhandedly to be the ghostwriter for this power chick. This girl that had all the stuff. She went to the big university, full scholarship. You know. She was the homecoming queen. She was all those other things. Anytime anything came up, anytime some photographer came to take a picture at school, the most important thing to do was to make sure that she was in that picture. You know? Of course, you wanted her to looked like just an everyday kid. She would actually dress down those days. And they would set up the picture. And, you know, even I might be in the picture. I seem to recall I was once in a picture with her. Actually, I was in a picture with a number three girl. She was a cheerleader, but she was definitely one of the higher-ups in the cheerleading. No, she was on the dance team, too. It was another sad thing. And they needed somebody to go out and do this. I don't know why they picked me. I wasn't unhandsome. I'm not an unhandsome person. But they were going to do a big thing around prom, and I got the opportunity to be the model for something that Sad was doing. And I said, sure, why not? Sounds like fun. Plus, I'm sorry, she was a gorgeous girl, at least for the time. Now that I look back on it, she was a horribly wretched. She treated me like crap, you know. And I'm this autistic guy. The number one thing about us is we do not know what to do in a social circumstance. So, you know, I did what I normally did, which was just freeze up, and, you know. Whatever. You know, I never did anything to her. You know, she treated me like I had burned down her house. I think it was because she really wanted to have her picture taken with somebody else. And for some reason, that somebody else hadn't been given the opportunity or couldn't make it or stuff like that. And I think I was drafted at the last minute because of a logistical issue. And that's kind of what ultimately happened. And of course, she was a model. She felt she was a professional model. I was somebody else. And she, of course, she, her job was to let me know where I stood, which was nowhere. You know, you're nothing. You're garbage. I'm taking this picture with me, and I'm going to look great. And we're going to try to make you at least look decent. But the whole point is, I look great. We were standing in front of a limousine that we were going to be, that the SAD chapter was going to be donating to some lucky couple would be able to come in the limousine, and it wasn't me. Just interesting altogether. I'm not going to go into the rest of it. I could tell the stories of where I was put into weird circumstances. But that's just an example. It's just one. I rarely got involved with clubs and organizations. The cross-country running team, which was really the only group I was ever a part of before, and I wasn't in high school. I mean, I wasn't as a senior. I only was at the school I was at, that I felt comfortable at earlier when I lived in Lubbock. You know, it was mostly composed of a few different people. You know, first there were the guys that could really run, that were really good at running long distances. I was really happy because we seemed to still kind of be something of a group, at least I felt like we were. Maybe I was wrong. I don't know. I didn't feel as left out, although I didn't participate in the activities because most of them had to do with drinking, and I didn't do drinking. You know, it was a religious thing too, but I also just didn't do drinking. It wasn't something that I was interested in. There was the guys who could really run well, and that was cool. And there was the guys who were in other sports and didn't want to play football, or who weren't going to do well in football, and therefore, but didn't want to have to go into PE. In Texas, when I was there, you were either in PE or you were in competitive athletics. Cross country kind of sucked in a lot of people that under other circumstances who really didn't want to be in PE. I was really glad because I didn't want to be in PE either. And I liked cross country. I just liked the whole aspect of it. I couldn't run fast at all. I liked the long distance, the solitary kind of stuff, things like that. I was okay. I was not competitive at all. I've never been a competitive person, but I couldn't even run fast enough that I would give the decent runners good training. You know, I always ended up being second, third, to last. I think if it was a question of, you know, you have to qualify to be on the cross-country team, I would have never qualified. It would have never happened. Because I wasn't that great of a runner. I'm not a fast runner at all. You know? But I didn't mind enduring. I kind of like the whole thing of enduring. I still do a lot of endurance types of things. Now it's backpacking. Anyway. But that's not the issue. The whole issue was, you know, how you can get co-opted by the group. I think these examples that I've given are times when I was in the building but was kind of stuck in some corner. You know, either I was there just because there was some kind of loophole that made me there. It wasn't because I wanted to be in the group particularly. I don't seem to recall that that was one of the things. I would usually get recruited by somebody, or just because other circumstances placed me there. I was on the cross-country team because I didn't want to play because I didn't want to be in PE, hated PE. Of course, when I came to, I think that's why I didn't run cross country in New Mexico, was because my sole reason to be in cross country was gone. In New Mexico, you didn't have a choice. You had to take PE. If you took competitive athletics, you had to take PE anyway. Now, in certain ones, in the big sports, you got to take your sport for two periods. Cross country was not one of those big sports. You had to go to PE, and then you ran cross country. And I didn't run cross country that year. I was saying to myself that I was preparing for bigger things. I wanted to try marathons and half marathons. I ran one 5K in my life. Well, no. I ran one 10K, which is longer than what you do. You usually do five Ks in cross country gets done in 5K. I actually trained bigger than 10Ks. I ended up just running a 10K and didn't. It was nothing. You know, like I said, I'm not a competitive person at all. Just to kind of say that, well, come on, gee whiz, Jay. Even though I spent some time in the building, it was typically just because of circumstances. I wasn't trying to be in the building. And when I wasn't in the building, you know, I wandered off. You know, people said, oh, Jay, you're such, you know, you were kind of a computer guy. Didn't you want to be in the computer club and have a little group? And you go, no. My wife has said lately she thinks I'm trying to find a peer group. And I said, no, I'm just trying to figure out where I fit in. And it would be interesting to see if other people fit in too. You know, when it gets down to it and people say, well, Jay, you know, if you found your peer group, would you want to, like, be closer to those people? Spend time with them? And you go, no. I don't want to spend time with those people. I have absolutely no interest in it. I said, I'd spend time with people to make God happy. And, well, anymore, I think I used to try for other reasons, mostly involved with getting close to girls. But now that I'm married, that's off the table. And that's good. I'm glad it's off the table because, you know, I was a little, I don't want to say oversexed, but I tended to obsess about sexual things. I never did it. I didn't do it until I was married. But, certainly obsessed with that. And I'm glad I got past that because there's, like I said, there's much better things to put your obsessions toward. Anyway, so, that's what happens. I think there are, you know, I think most locals, people from this planet, I think they really, a whole lot of them want to be in the building. Or they want to have some building to be in. I think I may be an anomaly simply for the reason that I could care less about buildings and all that stuff. It doesn't mean much to me, personally. But these things tend to be important. I think I'm going to have to do a part three. If we started out talking about the building, let's talk about after this what the analogy finally gets to. But I want to know that it's an analogy about society. It's an analogy about fitting in. So we'll get to that. Anyway, this is Jay Numero. You're listening to episode number 685. Oh, things get hot. The contact number, if you want to contact me, is, email. I don't want the calls anymore. It's not interesting to me. The email address is autism@quix.us. And feel free to contact me about anything. Just drop me a line. Lately, I've gotten a few more just Jay. I feel just like you do ones, and that's nice. You know, I'm not. I really am not looking for a peer group, but I am. I think I'm just hoping to want to do outreach because it would be really sad if there were lots of people like me that felt like that they were alone, that they were unique, that they were, that life sucked. And to tell them, no, you're not alone, but we just don't want to get, I don't want people around. Anyway, this is Jay Numero, episode number 685, part 2, next time, part 3, of The Speech. This is Jay. Where's my pointer? Let's find it. There it is. Have a great day.